A white man? No!
Welcome to the Unsub as a White Man. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Emily.
And we're back with another Criminal Minds recap. What an episode.
Yeah. This one's a wild ride.
This is a wild ride indeed. We are discussing Devil's Night, which originally aired October 27th, 2010. Very timely. Halloween-themed episode.
Yeah.
Right before Halloween. Just, I have thoughts. So we might as well just get started right away. It starts with a very weird song choice right at the beginning, I feel.
Yeah. And then it's like showing you at first, it's like my first note just said, Detroit looks kind of nice. And then it like, cause it's like an aerial shot of it. And then it like goes to like ground view shots of Detroit and it's just blight.
It's just like, so much blight.
That's it. Yeah. I was like, never mind. This is the Detroit I'm more familiar with.
The stereotypical stock footage blight.
Yeah. But yeah, we see, a man who has a hood up, like a hooded sweatshirt. And like, is it just because I've seen this before, but like right off the bat, you see that he has like very extensive facial scarring.
Yes. I mean, they try to hide it, but not well. So I don't know what they're going for.
That's
exactly
what I couldn't. I'm like, maybe if I hadn't seen the episode before, I wouldn't have picked up on it right away. But like, that's they're what like I was like, oh, you're just them. Showing us all the cards.
Yeah. Right, they're trying now to keep them in shadow. I think they were not intending to be explicit about it, but
I could not figure it out because it was like kind of shadowed, but not well.
Yeah.
But he's dragging a man through an abandoned warehouse.
Man's like incapacitated, you can tell. Like he seems like he's been like drugged or hit over the head.
Yeah,
or
he's
something.
Unconscious.
Yeah.
Because you don't realize until he's like chaining him up because he's like got chains on.
Yeah.
Like a weird way to restrain someone. Mm-hmm. But then he like chains him up with his arms above his head and like just slightly suspended over the ground. And then he starts yelling. So then you realize that he's actually still alive.
Mm-hmm.
And then he starts just piling up like pallets and stuff underneath him and pours gasoline all over it. And then lights a big bonfire underneath him and then just stands back and watches him burn.
Yeah. And I mean, being burned alive, absolutely brutal way to die.
Yeah.
Just unimaginable.
It's really horrifying.
Mm-hmm. But you know what I thought?
Yes.
Why bother with putting the hood over his head? Because he puts a black hood over his head before he sets him on fire. He already knows what he looks like, right? He's already seen him. So why bother putting the hood over his head before you burn him alive? You know, seems like an unnecessary
thing. They address that later.
They do.
Sort of. But it is a weird move.
Sort of.
Not in any meaningful way.
It's mentioned later. I don't know if they address it.
I should say addressed.
but it was a lot of graphic detail, I felt, for a Criminal Minds cold open, where you just, like, you actually see the man being burned alive.
Yeah.
Like, you see him on fire.
It's very unpleasant.
They, sometimes in the openings, they, like, dance around the violence a lot, right? But they are
they don't
not
want you to know exactly what happened to them usually until you get the debriefing.
Yeah.
Like, that's usually how it is. Like, you know something bad happens, but you don't get the details.
I guess there's
until
no dancing around what's going on right now. Even if we weren't seeing it, we would know he's being burned alive.
Yeah. But yeah, it cuts from that just shop of horrors over to Hotch's house. And we see Jack. Jack is still alive.
Hey, Hotch is a kid. Do you remember that?
Yeah. Like, I was trying to remember when the last time we saw Jack was, and I think it was like maybe the middle of last season. It's been like 15 episodes.
Speaking
since Jack
of House
has even
of
been
Horrors,
mentioned.
Think about Jack's childhood. Here we are with Hotch.
Yeah. Hotch asks him about his Halloween costume, but Jack says he doesn't want to be Spider-Man anymore. And they're like just having a little
bantering. Yeah. It was
moment.
Just like super dad with all like the Halloween stuff on the table.
Yeah.
And I mean, who is he, me? Like,
I know, it's like Sarah level holiday decorations.
Which is a kindergarten teacher level, which is a lot. Which is not what I imagine Hotch doing in his spare time. But maybe his sister-in-law or the babysitter or something really did all that stuff with Jack, and now Hotch is just here next to it.
That's true.
You imagine Hotch decorating cookies with
Hotch,
Jack?
Hotch seems like his level of... Well, I mean, he does tell Jack that he did a good job on the cookies, so maybe just let him loose with the frosting. But yeah, it's like, I figure his holiday decoration is probably like my level of Christmas decorating, where I pull out the... like 3 foot tree I have 3 days before Christmas.
Yeah.
I'm like, all right, guys, let's put some ornaments on this.
And not like my level of holiday decorating where it's like,
it takes a month to set it all up.
Yeah. Chevy Chase threw up in here, like National Lampoon level of decoration.
Yes.
But yeah, so it just seemed a lot for Hotch, but maybe he's overcompensating.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But then we get just a lot of info dumping from Reed about the history of Halloween.
Who I would expect to be very excited about Halloween.
I assume that that was not scripted and that was not anything but just Matthew Gregor being really excited. And they were like, film this.
So I was like, this seems to mimic real life.
Yeah. And she's like, oh my God.
Like, I'm supposed to be on a break right now and you're telling me this?
Yeah.
Like, they're not even filming.
But he, interestingly, does not know how to pronounce Soin.
No.
It's like, yeah. Samhain. It's like, even I know that's wrong. He also spends a lot of time explaining Phantasmagoria Theater.
Mm-hmm.
But then he's like, and then I have an extra ticket. And everybody is just like, okay. And I was like, actually,
are you kidding me?
Cool.
That sounds really fun.
I would love to go see
yeah,
that.
Yeah, please take me with you.
But yeah, Hotch tells everyone that they are heading to Detroit because somebody has been murdering people in the days leading up to Halloween for the last 3 years by burning them alive.
Mm-hmm. And so we've got a tight timeline. There's only 48 hours to go. Yeah. Then they'll have to wait till next year.
Wait another year. Reed gives some stats on arsonists, including that they're addicted to fire. So it's weird that this guy would have so much downtime where he's not setting things on fire.
Mm-hmm.
And then they decide that this is not an arsonist. It is a killer who uses fire as a weapon, which Garcia seems really surprised about that, despite this being, I believe, now the second or possibly third time that they've dealt with this exact scenario, yeah, where it's not a real arsonist, it's just a serial killer who uses fire.
Do you know what's interesting about Criminal Minds is that it's like they write this show like they don't expect anyone to keep watching it, right?
Or have ever watched it before.
Yeah. Right. It's like nobody's going to remember the last time we did this. Who's still even around? And we're all like, we are. And we remember when you did that before.
Yeah.
But they always write it like it's new. It's just so, it's such an interesting tactic to me. I don't know why.
Which only would make sense if like you are just getting like a brand new crop of writers every season.
Maybe.
But it's not, because like at least the showrunners are the same. Yeah. That's literally the showrunner's job.
Yeah.
Is to make sure that this is not happening.
But apparently that's just a level of detail they're not paying attention to. No. I don't know.
They're not detail people here. No, at Criminal Minds.
They are not detail people.
But yeah, we also get to see that the unsub is apparently a welder, I guess.
He's just doing
some welding.
He's doing some fire stuff. They're like, what kind of jobs would have fire?
Yeah. Welding.
Okay.
Ish.
Ish.
It's kind of fire. I mean, it is fire, but like.
But like. Not in the same way that.
It's a tool.
Yeah.
Anyway, we learn that Devil's Night is a 3-day debacle in which fires are set all over the city.
Mm-hmm.
They also deduce that the unsub is angry and potentially feels disenfranchised. He's patient and methodical and always has a plan. But Hotch says that the flaw in his plan is that they know about it.
Now we know what he's doing.
It's very dramatic.
It is very.
He says it too. Yeah. And it falls a little flat.
Yeah. Yep.
Then we get our first quote. Niccolo Machiavelli wrote, "If an injury has to be done to a man, it should be so severe that his vengeance need not be feared." Like, wow.
Whoa.
That's a bit intense.
Machiavelli's pretty scary.
Yeah. So the team meets with, they're not working with the police, despite this not being an arsonist. Mm-hmm. They're going to deal with the guy from the fire department.
Yes.
They have a joint task force, apparently, but we never meet anyone from the police department. It's just Ernie Hudson.
Yes.
from Ghostbusters. So the medical examiner tells them that the unsub covers the faces of his victims because they found the
like the charred fabric
pieces. Mm-hmm. And Rossi wonders why he wouldn't want to see their faces if he's watching them burn. Mm-hmm. And Hotch says that it's an execution. So that's okay. That answers your question. He's executing them.
I guess.
That's what you
I mean, I knew he was executing them, but still, I'm still on Rossi's side of this. Why wouldn't you want to see their faces?
It doesn't make sense.
No.
It's not a formal execution. Right. Also, people who are, I assume, viewing executions are not doing it because they enjoy watching someone die.
I mean, I hope not.
It's their job, usually.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, Morgan and Prentice go to check out the site of the fire. They, walk into the warehouse, and Prentice is like, oh. What is this place? And he's like, it's an old engine factory. And they're like, it's medieval. No, it's not. It's an engine
factory. It's an old factory. It's like, would you not going into Detroit imagine that 90% of the abandoned buildings
used
are
to be
factories?
Factories for cars in some capacity.
Yes.
That was my assumption with every one of the buildings they showed
us. But not for Prentice.
No. And she's also clearly never seen anything medieval either.
Well, she's like,
what is this? The building from Footloose?
She's such an East Coast elite.
That's true.
That she just doesn't know what it's like to be the working man.
Yeah.
She sees the factory.
Her first time in the Rust Belt.
Yeah. What kind of things do they do here? Make stuff? How does stuff get made? Wow.
I thought it just showed up in the stores.
I get my engine. My engine's already in the car when I get it.
Ernie says that there was a fire alarm in the building and his team was there within 5 minutes of the alarm going off.
So he's not even really watching them.
Yeah, that doesn't seem like, I don't know. How long does it take to die when you're being burned alive?
I don't know. I'm not going to look that up.
I don't know either. But it seems like it would take a very long time, which is part of the reason it's terrible.
Right.
If you died instantaneously, it's not that bad.
Do you know why I am still scarred from the scene in The Last of the Mohicans? Where the one guy gets burned alive and they shoot him with an arrow from far away to put him out of his misery. Do you remember that part? Which I apparently saw when I was too young. I don't know. And that's all.
Because your dad really liked it and he made you watch it. That's why I have seen that movie.
Yes. No, and my mom. When we were in Asheville, we had to go to the waterfall where they filmed Last of the Mohicans and so she could stand underneath.
I remember that picture of your mom.
Yeah, what you didn't see in that picture is me and my brother standing just out of shot, absolutely dying of embarrassment because there were so many other people around.
Nice.
But anyway, so that scene from Last of the Mohicans is all I can think about, and I feel like it took him a really long time to die.
Yeah. 5 minutes does not seem like long enough.
No, they could still, I guess maybe your burn, even if they got there in time to put you out, your burns would be too extensive. And he is using an accelerant.
Yeah.
So he's not just lighting a fire. So maybe that makes it worse if you have gasoline
all over you. But it seems
if
the reason you want to watch it is to
inflict the pain on someone.
To watch somebody be in a massive amount of pain.
Yeah.
I don't know. Disable the fire alarms?
I don't know. I'm going to make a regrettable Google search while you're talking.
But we also learn about the massive neighborhood watch group that's active in the city.
Yes, Detroit's finest.
Yes. It seems like that's going to play a really big part in the episode because they spend so long talking about it and it does not come back again.
Don't get invested in that. It says if you pour gasoline over your head and light it, you'd pass out in less than a minute because your lungs would sear from the heat.
Oh, that makes sense.
So
I guess, yeah.
You wouldn't live for more than 5 minutes, but you'd pass out long before that. But that's with the gasoline. So I maintain that the scene in Last of the Mohicans was more traumatizing because there was no accelerant there. But yeah, with the accelerant, you would pass out pretty quickly. Yeah. So I guess there's not much to watch.
Yeah.
If you're lighting someone on fire with gasoline, they'd pass out within a minute, giving you 4 minutes to flee. Still doesn't seem like a lot of time. This seems like the kind of abandoned place.
Literally anywhere in one of those buildings.
That's true. If you had your car parked the next building over and you just waited till they left, I'm like, are they just driving past on the one road in and out to this isolated factory?
Yeah.
But anyway.
So they suspect that the unsub knew his first victim because it seems like there was more pain intentionally inflicted on that victim than the subsequent victims. And then they decide that since he knew the first victim, he probably knew all of them.
Yeah.
Like, okay, sure.
Sure.
So they bring the wife of the latest victim, Tony Terrell, I think his name is.
Yeah, something like that.
His name is Tony. So she is like, can I, do you have pictures of him? And Prentice, like, clearly they haven't explained to this woman how her husband dies because Prentice has to tell her that
that's
he was burned alive.
That's what I was so confused about it. Like, how is she sitting there in this police station and she doesn't know how he died yet? And Prentice obviously doesn't know that she doesn't know how he died. When she goes in for this conversation, she's assuming no one's
talked to you. Yeah. Huh? This seems like something somebody should have had a conversation with you about.
You can't see these. You never want to. This is a closed casket sort of situation.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Just awful.
Yeah. It's like Prentice is not prepared to be delivering this news.
Yeah. Like, nobody told her she was going to have to tell her the details.
Yeah. It's not good.
At least they sent Prentice in instead of somebody else.
That's true. If it was like Reed or Rossi, like,
yeah, and then
whoops.
Reed would have just started explaining, like, well, he would have passed out within a minute. Right. So Kirsten, the wife, talks to Rossi then, who does a cognitive interview.
She's like, hypnosis?
And he's like, absolutely not.
And I'm like, yes.
He's like, so anyway, then he hypnotizes her. she remembers the Halloween festival they had gone to the evening before. It's a tradition for them. They attend every year because they met. It's like a Greek festival or something.
But also part of Devil's Night? I don't know. I didn't get it.
It's a uniquely American holiday, so that's why it's in the Greek festival.
Sure.
I don't know. But she remembers, she's like, I remember fire. She's like remembering all of these things. And it's like, first, like a scary person in a mask. And she's like, but it was just a small child. And then I remember fire. It was the grill where they were making food at the Greek restaurant. But Tony walks away from her because he doesn't want euros. So he goes over to the Mexican restaurant. And Rossi's like, you probably don't even know, but your instinct, because you love him, is to look up and check. And she's like, oh, I did look up. I'm like, I don't know. I don't know about that, Rossi.
Yeah.
So she remembers seeing him over at the table at the Mexican restaurant and then seeing behind him what she describes as a man in a mask that covered half his face with no ear, wearing a hooded sweatshirt. And then he's like, how old was he? And she's like, I don't know. And he's like, think about his body. And she's like, 25. He's wearing jeans and a hoodie that's covering his entire face. Just like, yes, that is a 25-year-old man if I've ever seen one.
I don't know how you would know.
Yeah. And she also says that he's black.
Yes.
So we are looking for a 25-year-old black man.
But you know what I was, the worst part of this flashback or this cognitive interview for me was how many times Tony and his wife call each other baby. It is just constant.
I didn't notice that.
It's like, oh, baby, but don't you want to eat this? No, baby, I'm going to go over the Mexican. Okay, baby, but be really quick. I'll be right back, baby. Don't worry. I was like, oh, my God, one of you deserves to die. I can't take it.
The logical next step would be for Garcia to check news reports for near fatal fires and medical records for a black man with extensive facial burning. They don't do that though. Nobody tells Garcia to look for anything.
There's more story to tell first. Yes. We can't have Garcia solve the case yet.
So the team explains to Ernie, whose name I never caught, that the unsub targets his victims because he feels that they've wronged him in some way. Ernie says that the second victim, Josephine, was super nice and had no enemies, and that the latest couple didn't even speak to the unsub at all. So how could he feel slighted by them? And they're like, no, it doesn't have to be real. Like, it's his perception that he's been slighted in some way. They point out that the two victims were taken from their spouses, like the second and third victims were taken from their spouses, and that maybe the unsub resents their happiness. Mm. So
nursing a broken heart.
Yeah. And then we see the unsub lurking outside a house. It looks like it's just like in a nice suburban neighborhood.
But did you get the glimpse of like the picture of him pre-injury with a lover? in a picture.
Yeah, yeah. He's like looking.
Yeah,
looking at the photo.
So like maybe he's jealous of these couples, and then there's like, look, it's him, but he's not burned.
Yeah. Then he's standing outside the house, and then a man arrives home, and mm-hmm. his daughter's in the car. She looks like she's like 3 or 4. She's still in a car seat and everything. Mm-hmm. And they're singing. He's got the whole world in his hands together, mm-hmm. and it's really
like,
cute.
My heart dropped, like her tiny little voice singing, like, oh no.
And he gets out of the car and walks around. He's getting something out of the trunk, and mm-hmm. she just keeps singing, like, to herself. Mm-hmm. And then he like blitz attacks him, mm-hmm. and the little girl looks in the rearview mirror and sees a glimpse mm-hmm. of him dragging her away.
Yeah.
And she's just like crying out for him. It's so sad.
It's so sad. She's like strapped into the car seat and like, oh.
Just. But also it's like one of those, like they have neighbors.
Right.
Like, don't you think
these houses are close together?
Don't you think you'd notice if there was a kid just screaming from a car?
Yes, like, I would absolutely note. Look, nobody does anything on this street that I don't know about. We already have established that about me. So if you're one of my neighbors, rest assured.
Detroit's finest is watching. You need that sign on your door.
I do.
So the van arrives at yet another abandoned warehouse, which mm-hmm. there are no shortage of here in Detroit. Mm-hmm. The team explains to Ernie that this is not an arsonist. They cannot stress this enough. It is a serial killer who uses fire. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. yeah, you don't need to explain it to each character individually and each other. they wondered why someone so controlled would be drawn to such an unpredictable weapon. Like, you've already guessed that this man has been badly burned. So yeah. I would guess it has something to do with that.
Mm-hmm.
But
and perhaps the people he's targeting are all somehow related to the accident in which he was very badly burned.
Yeah. No, they're not going to look into that yet. They're not. We do see that the latest abductee, who is in the back of his van, mm-hmm. knows the unsub's name.
Yes.
Which is Cayman, mm-hmm. but I thought he was saying Heyman at first because... I wasn't paying attention to the subtitles. I thought he was like, hey man, stop.
Then he's just saying hey man as many times as they said baby
and then he
in
said
that
it, like,
flashback.
Too many times. And I was like, oh, he's saying Cayman. That's the guy's name. Got it. So they finally decide to look into into couples who were involved in some sort of an accident where mm-hmm. someone was burned. Hotch is like, yep, let's look into this. And then Morgan gets a phone call about the latest victim, Chris mm-hmm. Edwards. They know that since all of these attacks have happened in the Rivertown district, mm-hmm. Hotch and Ernie are just like, well, we're just going to go there. Like,
yeah.
Just wait for a fire to start. But they don't like bring the fire truck.
No,
seems
no.
Seems like you should just bring one.
They just like go in their
the
car.
Yeah. They ride bikes.
Like easy peasy. The two of us are just going to put the fire out real quick.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then so Rossi is like, I'm in charge now. Forget about that thing with the couples who were burned. Look, since we know that Chris is a contractor, let's look into all of the subcontractors he's ever hired mm-hmm. and see if anyone has been fired that he might be mad, like that might be mad at him.
Yeah.
Like, wow, and that seems
they're like,
roundabout.
That's a lot of people actually.
Yeah. So they don't find anything right away, but then Garcia's like, oh, let me try this one other weird thing. And then they get one name.
Yes. She's just like,
it's Cayman Scott. Mm-hmm. So Chris continues to try to reason with Cayman and offers him money or a job and to let him go and says he won't tell anybody about it. Mm-hmm. It's like, why do they always try that? It's not going to work. Do you think that they think you're not going to tell anybody about
right?
it?
Just let me go. I'll keep it to myself. Yeah. Here's what I don't get.
I won't tell anyone you kidnapped me.
Yeah.
Tried to murder me.
He's been abducting and killing people. Is this the third year or three previous years? This is the fourth year.
I think this is the third year.
Either way, the people he's abducting are getting increasingly closer to him as a person.
Yes.
So it's so dumb to abduct anyone even loosely related to you. Like, this contractor is so close to him. How would you not inevitably be caught?
Well, Garcia had to do Garcia magic. So, like, a normal cop would never be able to find that.
I guess. If the BAU was there, Ernie and his buddies would still just be like, oh, shucks, and all about this thing.
only thing we can do is just sit in every empty warehouse until somebody shows up and tries to burn someone.
Yeah, it was just, I don't know, just thought it was very strange how, like, close to him the people were getting.
Yeah.
And it's only going to get worse as the episode goes on.
So we learned that Kamen was apparently a juvenile delinquent before he turned his life around completely in 2004. He was then in a car accident caused by Tommy Proctor, who was the first victim, who apparently he used to, like, do minor crimes with at some point.
I guess, and then,
but, like, this but part annoyed me so much.
It was just, because, like, a random car accident, right?
Yeah, because she's, like, Garcia's, like, so, like, you know, he was a juvenile delinquent. He totally turned his life around, got, like, super, like, cleaned up his act, did everything. He used to do, or he, like, was involved in something, some crime with Tommy Proctor. And then they never saw each other again until they literally collided. I'm like, please just say that he knew the victim.
Yeah.
Like, you don't.
It's all backstory.
Like, the way that everything is described in this episode, it's all so much information on this really tight time frame situation.
Yeah.
Like, you need to know who this guy is. Mm-hmm. What is his address? So she, like, gives them the whole backstory. And then they're like, oh, and I have his address. This is just shut up. Nobody needed to know any of this. But anyway, Kamen was badly burned in the accident. He was in a coma for a while. He ended up losing his apartment while he was in the coma. And that landlord was Tony Terrell, the third victim.
Yes.
I never caught how the second victim was connected to him.
Well, there has to be way more than that, right? He's killing three people a year. He's already killed seven people.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know about the rest,
like,
of them.
All of these people are connected to him, but they only describe
showed those two. Yeah, I don't know. And you'd think that if there were that many people connected to you personally.
Like, how many people? I don't know that many people.
Related to me, how many people do I kill before everyone is like, look, the common denominator?
Yeah.
I feel like they found a common denominator with way less victims than this.
Yeah.
Right? Because he's killed at least seven people. Maybe 10. Because I still don't know if this is year three or year four.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's a lot of people.
It just seems like he's given them a lot of clues. I don't know.
Yeah, the yarn board would all connect quickly.
Wait a second, this is a circle.
So Morgan and Prentice head to Kamen's home, which I think is just in an old warehouse.
Yeah, which
is everything. Is Detroit just a series of old warehouses and factories?
There are no homes. Everybody just lives in abandoned factories. And his is just...
And then there's the suburbs. Right. Outside where there are houses.
Where Tim the Toolman Taylor lives.
Yes.
And Kamen's house is just like a dark, cavey room full of gas.
Tools.
And tools.
Tools and gas.
Yes.
Yeah.
What?
They're like walking around and they're like looking at all of stuff, and it's clear, like, he's just got like shelves of tools and like his bed in the corner and stuff. And they're like, there's no mirrors. He must hate the way he looks. I'm like, how many mirrors do people have in their house?
When you come, there's not a single mirror to be seen unless you go into my bathroom.
Yeah.
Later into the bedroom.
I have one on my, like, living room, like, coat closet door because it is built into the door.
Right. We have one built. I forgot about that one because the door is always open. We never look at it.
Yeah. But I didn't put a mirror.
No.
Like, it's not like in the other episode where, like, the guy covered all the mirrors.
Right.
In the bathrooms and stuff.
But right.
Like,
that would be more telling.
They're like, there's no mirror in this living room.
It's like, there's no bathroom in here either, it doesn't seem like.
Where's the kitchen mirror?
Yeah.
What is happening here? I just want to, is it just like a house of mirrors in Morgan's house? He just really likes to look at himself.
I would imagine.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So they decide that he must be ramping up to hurt the person who broke his heart. But who? Who could it be?
Who could it be?
So Kamen hits Chris in the knees with some sort of metal bar or something, pours gasoline all over him.
And they're just like in the street.
He's in a rush, so he has to start making dumb mistakes now because the episode needs to wind up.
Sure. And while they had like cordoned off the neighborhood so he like can't get to where he planned to go or something, so he just
like,
literally...
Okay, find a different building.
He literally pulls... How would he do that? That's crazy. He literally pulls over just on the side of the road. Like, there are other cars around, there are people around, It's really weird.
Yeah. Just lights him on fire and watches him run away, like right into traffic. Yeah. And then he gets hit by a car and came and just runs away on foot. Just leaves his car.
I guess it's so bizarre.
Yeah. It's like, this is a dumb thing. Yeah. You didn't need to do any of this. No. This is all dumb.
And I'll tell you right now, they never give a formal profile. They do a lot of speculating wildly here and there. I didn't write any of it down. I refused.
No, there's no profile.
I refused to lean into what was happening here.
So Kamen looks at a photo of himself with a pretty woman, and then Morgan finds Kamen's diary, maybe? I don't know. Under his pillow.
Yeah.
And there's photos of the same girl stuck in it. And then Kamen runs into a diner the same diner that was in the background.
Yeah, but they act like it takes a while for them to figure out the background of this photo.
Which...
they have to send the photos to Garcia, and Garcia has to...
It makes me so angry because, like...
you can clearly see...
First of all, you can see it. I'm like, okay, I'm not familiar with this place, right? You know who is? Ernie.
Yep.
Send the photo to him and say, where is this? And then he would go, oh, that's JMO's diner.
This is 2010. You can Google it.
Yeah.
From your phone.
But like, ask one of the local people who is inevitably around because they would recognize it immediately. Like,
right.
You could show.
Right. If you showed that section of sign from a restaurant here in town, I would be like, oh, that's that place.
I mean, you could, not that we're, you know, Detroit is big. There's more things. But
still,
like, you could show a photo of somebody inside of one of any of the restaurants in town with no other identifying factors.
Yes.
And we would be able to identify what it is. Like, just ask someone.
Yeah.
It has to be faster.
And here's the thing, too. Kamen takes off, but this man is just limping down the street with his hood up like the Hunchback of Notre Dame.
He really has a very
It's a very exaggerated gait.
He's not running.
No. And I was just like, it made me wonder, what do actors think when they take roles like this?
Because I would assume that it's like he's limping on the side.
Yeah.
Where like he's got all the burning and stuff. Like there's inevitably going to be some muscle
damage. Is this an actor choice? Is this a director choice? Who told you to do this? Because doesn't it remind you of that episode of Murderville with Kumail Nanjiani?
Will
Arnett's just like, no, more, do it more. And just until it turns into this guy.
Yeah. But also like,
down the street.
If you are making the point that he like has this inability to like run in an efficient way, why are there so many shots of him running for a very long time? Yeah. Because all this is making me think is like, this man could not run away from a crime scene.
Right.
Like, okay, they got there. He watched that man die and they got there in 5 minutes. He'd still be hobbling his way out of the building.
Like, trying to get into it.
He can't
run
away.
That van's really high up off the ground.
Yeah. Then now I don't believe that he escaped any of these scenarios.
It just,
because
it was
he can't
so
run.
Weird to include and.
Just so many shots.
Yes.
There are so many shots.
And it's just, it's so over the top. And it's just such a strange way to portray somebody with a disability. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just don't know how I feel about it. And it was just so cartoony and ridiculous. And I,
Yeah. So he runs into the diner. He barricades the door and asks for Tracy. The man tells him that he needs to go get help and reaches for his gun. And Kamen like beats him up and tells him that he's going to burn.
Yeah. The owner guy, the diner owner guy looked familiar too. I don't know why.
Yeah, I don't know who he was either, but he did
I
look familiar. So yeah, then Garcia explains again in an unbelievably roundabout way that Kamen is probably in JMO's diner.
Yeah.
She's like, well, I found 5 diners in Rivertown and blah, blah, blah. And you're like, please tell them where to go.
Right. Like all you have to do is Google Rivertown diner and you would find out what one this is.
Yeah.
But.
So the old man won't tell Kamen where Tracy is. So Kamen sets the restaurant on fire. Hotch runs into the burning building when they get there. Just runs straight in.
Just waltzes right in.
Brings the guy back out.
Just in time.
And, you know, he runs in and at no point does Ernie, who is like the fire department chief person, go, no.
Right? He knows better than to go running into a burning building like that.
Yeah. So, yeah, pulls him out just before the entire building explodes. Now Hotch isn't going to be able to hear again. Who knows how long.
Emily, they're not going to reference an old episode.
No.
They just did that in the last episode. They're not going to do that again for a while.
Not for like six more seasons.
Mm-hmm.
So the man tells Hotch that Kamen was the one who attacked him and not to let him get to Tracy.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of like, who is Tracy?
Oh.
So Kamen arrives at a house. He's watching an older couple through the window, and they're very clearly like a very happy couple. They're cleaning up after dinner and like washing the dishes and stuff. We learn that JMO is James Morris, who had a daughter, Tracy, who was adopted by James's sister when his wife died.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why she has a different last name.
Okay.
They're like, why is her last name different? And then they go through this whole thing.
Like, I don't need to know any of these
details. Nobody needs
to know
any of this. This is a lot of information in a very time-sensitive situation. So Kamen goes in, he attacks the Andersons and pours gasoline. Or not, it's not gasoline because he finds it in the house.
It's like some paint thinner or something. Paint thinner maybe?
Or something. It's like methyl alcohol or something like that. I don't know.
It's something flammable.
Yeah. Something in a metal container.
Yeah.
So he asks them where Tracy is, and they tell him that she's in medical school in Ohio and that it's been 5 years and she's moved on and he needs to just get over it and move on.
It's a weird vibe. The whole thing is a weird vibe.
Like, they clearly know him well.
Mm-hmm.
Hotch and Ernie arrive at the house, and they call in a sniper.
Mm-hmm.
Tracy is in the house after all, it turns out, because she just appears.
In the back room.
Yes.
Yeah, apparently she was just hanging out, watching him pour whatever that was all over those people.
Her parents.
Yeah.
The people who raised her.
Yeah.
She apologizes to Kamen and asks him what happened to him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, he was very badly burned in an accident.
You abandoned him while he was in a coma, apparently.
Yeah.
Like, wait, I thought I was not supposed to be feeling bad for Kamen. I'm starting to feel bad for Kamen.
Yeah, I mean, like, not the thing, like, obviously this is a very outsized reaction.
Sure.
But, like,
but if you were in a debilitating accident, he was in a coma and in rehab for, like, years. And
but he was only in a coma for, like, a couple of months, I think they say.
But she abandoned him while he was in the coma.
That seems mean.
And he has to get his whole life back together alone. He doesn't seem like he has any sort of support system.
Yeah, and like, also, can't you just like, I mean, like she just like disappeared and never talked to him again.
Yeah,
and it's like you could have at least just been like, we're very young. This is too much for me to handle.
Right. Like, have some sort of conversation with the guy.
Yeah. It was just weird.
Mm-hmm.
Then it turns out that Tracy has a kid.
A 5-year-old.
Yes. Hotch sneaks into the house and tells Kamen to back off. And he's like, Tracy, you have to tell him. And he's like, what? What's going on? And you're like, can you not read the room?
Context
Kamen,
clues.
Come on. Like, he's like, wait, he called you mom. Is this your son? He's 5?
I haven't seen you in
my God.
5 years.
It's been approximately 5 years since we've seen each other last. And Tracy reveals that she found out that she was pregnant when Kamen was in the accident and in his coma, and that the little boy is his son, and his name is, and they pause for a big reveal, Daniel Kamen Anderson.
Mm-hmm. And that's supposed to be enough. So here's, again, why I'm confused.
And then the little boy reaches out and he touches Kamen's burned face. And it's really cute.
And it melts his cold, murderous heart.
And then he just gives himself up.
But I don't understand. Again, he was in the coma. I mean, any amount of coma is a long time for a coma, in my opinion.
Yes.
But if he's in the coma for a few months and then he, you know, he's badly burned, he has all the stuff to do. She knows she's pregnant, but she never tells him. Doesn't that seem extra cruel?
Yeah, it's
like,
really mean.
You feel like you have no reason to live.
It's so
mean. If you knew you had a kid, that would maybe brighten your spirits, make it easier to go through the rehabilitation and the scarring and the rebuilding your life with nothing.
It's very mean. I don't understand.
Right? Like, I don't understand why she did this to him. Like, was he a bad...
He was a very nice person before because they're all like, what happened to you? I don't understand what happened to
you. So if he wasn't a bad guy before... I would only understand this if he had been, like, some horribly abusive partner to her.
And it doesn't seem that way.
No. So I was so lost and feeling so bad for Kamen. Yeah. He thinks he has nothing to live for. Maybe if he had known he had a son this whole time, it would have been easier to rebuild his life and deal with his scars. and his disability.
And like also then you're just like not telling this kid that like not letting him have any relationship with his dad.
For no reason, yeah.
Because he looks scary.
Yeah. How would you know what he looks like? You abandoned him as soon as he was in the hospital. Yeah. And she apparently had not a scratch on her in the accident.
Well, the fire was only on one side of the car.
That's how fires work.
I don't know. This episode went off the rails real fast.
It really did. Yes. It starts so strong and then it really just, the wheels come right off this cart.
So then we get our next quote. Thomas Kemp wrote, "Love feels no burden, thinks nothing of its trouble, attempts what is above its strength, pleads no excuse for impossibility, for it thinks all things are lawful for itself and all things are possible."
Just keeps going. Thomas Kemp
is a wordy, wordy man.
Every time it feels like the end and then it's not the end of that quote.
The end of the third Lord of the Rings.
Yes.
And then at the very end, we learn that Jack has finally decided on a costume.
Yes.
And he comes out wearing his little suit and his little tie that he's clearly tied himself because he doesn't know how to tie a tie. Mm-hmm. And he says, "I'm you, Daddy." He doesn't want to be Spider-Man because he's not a real superhero like Hotch.
Like so much Hotch redemption. Season 6 has been Hotch's time to shine.
And yeah. And then they're like, he's like, "Let's go get some candy." And you're like, "All right, you boys have fun."
And there we have it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just pure insanity from top to bottom from the moment this episode started until the end.
I say it went off the rails, but it was only very slightly on the rails at the beginning.
Yeah, it was a rough one. I mean, entertaining, sure.
Yeah.
Very entertaining to watch, but it was another one of those where Nate would come in the room while I was watching and just have that look on my face. Be like, one of those episodes,
happening?
Huh?
I don't know.
I don't know what's going on up here. But we do have a not a white man.
Yes.
So for season 6, we're now 5-2, 71% white men. Nice. Overall, 112-25, 81.8% white men.
Whoa.
All the way down to 81.8.
It's a real deviation.
Yeah. This is huge for us.
Yeah.
We don't have a profile to score. We really don't have any Hotch to watch because, I mean, we watched him. Knock it out of the park, being super dad this time.
He is.
Who knew?
He is parenting.
He does have a child and acknowledges that he exists in this episode. What more could you want from the man? The next episode is Middleman, which does not ring a bell for me.
I don't remember this one. Mm-hmm. I read the description and I was like, I don't know.
It's hard to come after whatever this is that we just watched, so... That one will stick with you for a while. Yeah. So, yes, I'll be interested to rediscover that one the next time. But, yeah, man. There you have it, I guess. I feel like this is a very rare episode where I have, like, nothing to wrap up with. Like, well.
It's like, well.
There it was.
We sure did watch that one.
Yep, we did. I guess we'll watch another one and see what happens next. Wherever you're listening, be sure to leave a 5-star review. You can find us on Instagram and TikTok at The Unsub is a White Man. Our merch is on Redbubble. If you get any, make sure you tag us. We'll share you to our stories. Our theme music is composed and performed by Nate Youngblood, and the podcast is produced by Nate Youngblood. Thanks, Nate.
And until next week, we'll be exploring...